Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. It is our February Q&A episode. You've got questions, we've got answers, and we're going to dive into them here today. Before we get too far into it, another set of quick announcements for y'all. I promise I'm going to make them brief. For those of you that have been listening for a while, you know that you can hit the forward ahead by 15 or 30 seconds or whatever to get through them a little bit quicker. But if you are interested in our events around the country, things that we have going on, please pay attention just for a quick, brief moment, and we'll fill you in on all those nitty-gritty details. Number one, speaking of events, we are heading on the road. In fact, the HBIC is in Austin, Texas, as I'm standing here talking to you. This is right when the busy season starts for us in terms of travel, getting out on the road, selling wine, slinging wine with you all. We're going to be on the East Coast. Brittany's going to be in the Carolinas next month or at the end of this coming month in March. I'm going to be all over the Midwest. You can head to our website, mtgawines.com. In the top nav there, you can see the link for upcoming events. Just go check that out. And then we'll have a running list of everything that we got going on this year. We also have upcoming trips to Missouri. We're going to be in Colorado. We're going to be in Texas. We got all kinds of stuff that'll be announced as time goes on. If you would like to get first dibs on tickets to these events, while you're on our website, again, mtgawines.com, you can sign up for our mailing list or even our wine club if you want to check out some of the wines that we are shipping out this year. It's the best way to support us small producers and also get some of the wines that you love directly to your door. But please be 21 years or older, otherwise the government will get really mad at me. Oh yeah, always a problem. Next, be sure to like, subscribe, and follow the show here. If you can give a little rating and review wherever you're consuming your podcast, that would be hugely helpful when it comes to the algorithm, you know, getting the show out and about for other wine lovers. Please give it a quick look if you have a second. You can follow us on all of our social networks as well to get the podcast and the announcements of releases of it. That's on YouTube, Instagram, the Book of Face, as well as the social network formerly known as Twitter. Our handle's at MTGA Wines on all of those. That is also where you can submit questions for this Q&A episode. We try and answer your questions, at least four or five of them at the end of every month, and you can slide into our DMs, leave a comment underneath the podcast, whatever the case may be. We'll be sure to check it out and see what we can find and hunt down for you on the good old interwebs within the industry, whether it's wine, hospitality, events, all the production, growing season, all the things. We talk about it all here. So be sure to submit your questions and we'll try to answer them. I've got a running list of stuff to cover. We'd love to add your questions to that list. All right. Without further ado, my curtain over here has been like messing with me. Like the light is shining right here and it's fine, but we'll figure it out. For those of you watching, you might see me like adjust this every once in a while. If you hear like clanging in the background, it's messing with the blinds over here. All right. The Q&A episode. One last thing. I have a little bit of the con crud, as they call it, where I'm a little stuffed up. So if there's a quick pause for station identification, that's going to be a thing. Actually, our first question deals with this particular event, Premier Napa Valley. Some of you who have been to like large scale conventions, you know what the con crud is. It's you're not sick, but you're like a little stuffy. You're a little run down and tired. You're a little like you sound a little congested, like I know I do right now. Hopefully not too bad, but it's just like annoying, like cloying, like airplane head, basically, because you've shook hands and hung out with so many people. Like it's a giant swirling petri dish. These big conventions, worth it. They're a ton of fun, but you do suffer the ramifications of hanging out with a few thousand of your best friends. It's just the way it goes. So speaking of which, let's get into question number one, shall we? And this is about exactly what I was talking about. Premier Napa Valley. What is this Premier Napa Valley auction and event? Who attends? What's the money for? So if you've been following us on social media for the last couple of weeks, you've seen us posting about this. PNV25 is the hashtag. This is an event that's been put together by the Napa Valley Vintners for some time now, and it is in essence their big fundraiser. For those of you that don't know what the Napa Valley Vintners are, it is kind of our marketing advocacy group here in the Valley. They're the ones that do everything from flying to Washington, D.C. to meet with legislatures. They're the ones putting together events for us to do around the country. And they also have a few big fundraising efforts. events. This one in the winter is the one that focuses around the trade, wholesale, so restaurants, retailers, and collectors, things of that nature. So it's very focused on like the industry side of it, and it's also their kind of a big chunk of their annual budget. The money that is raised goes right into the coffers of the vintners to kind of help handle their operations, their initiatives, events, all that kind of good stuff. The second thing that they do that's another big event is Auction Napa Valley, now known as Collective Napa Valley, depending on who you ask. Most of us that kind of grew up here and that have been around here for a long time, we still call it Auction Napa Valley because that's when it was like this big blowout party of a weekend where we're raising like $12 to $16 million, and now they kind of have changed it post-COVID to spread it out and do all this other stuff, which is great. They're still raising a bunch of money for charity, and that's focused on kind of the giving aspect of it, and you know, providing, you know, charities with and different, you know, organizations with a good chunk of change to do their, you know, good work. That's more the consumer-facing event for folks like probably yourselves. If you're a wine consumer, you can come to Auction Napa Valley and bid on certain lots, enjoy the scene here. It's quite a bit of fun. Really, they're kind of two of my favorite events that happen here in the Valley. And Premier, you know, the one that just happened this last weekend, is just a whirlwind. It's like it's 5 days of just like boom, 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 events and more events and dinners and more wine. And by the way, here's a shot of tequila. And it's just like, it's a barrage. And there's a reason why you get a little stuffed up and a little worn down. Going to the gym yesterday to like sweat some of that out, I'm pretty sure my sweat was like 40 proof. Like it had to have been after this last weekend. It was really tough getting through leg day yesterday. The recovery is real. But all jokes aside, Premier Napa Valley, this is something that we attended last year. It's something that, you know, we've been very lucky to work with some friends and be in attendance to the Big Barrel Auction and kind of the main event, which are these 5 to 10 or 20 case lots that us wineries put together that can be bid on. And there are any number of retailers and restaurateurs or distributors in the room from all over the world that will bid on these lots. Some going for tens of thousands of dollars, some going for a few thousand dollars. Like there's a little something for everybody. Some of them are local bidders, you know, from here in California. Others flew in from Japan. Some are from the great state of Texas or Florida or whatever. You know, there's gonna be all kinds of stuff that goes on. There's all kinds of unique lots that happen. And that's kind of a big sticking point for this event is that the lots need to be unique. Very typically, these 5, 10, or 20 case lots are going to be something that the winery has never done before, that you're only going to see. You're not going to see it out and about. Like, this is the finite, like, it's only going to be this volume. You're never going to see it in, like, all these retail chains. You're never going to see it in a bunch of states. There's going to be one account or, like, one distributor that gets access to this wine, and that's it. It's a pretty cool, I think, still a very cool way to kind of support, you know, our industry and provide them with some like, hey, like here's some really great juice from these really amazing producers, and this is a one-off. Like you're never gonna see this kind of thing again. It's a pretty cool kind of cachet, cool kind of vibe. I think this year there were close to 200 lots. It's like 194, 196 lots. So the auction takes a good few hours. That's like a 2 to 3 hour process of working through all this stuff. Our lot was lot number 53. We're kind of at the front of the line, which was kind of nice for giving our first year. And we offered a 5-case lot, which was a blend of Coombsville Cabernet as well, Cabernet Sauvignon, I should say, and St. Helena Cabernet Sauvignon. The Coombsville is something that we've never done before, so this was like a perfect opportunity to do something kind of fun and interesting and just different than what we have ever done before as a wine producer. Our lot was super well received, super stoked with how it all turned out. And it'll be shipping out to the great state of Texas, actually coming up once it's ready to go, because it's still in barrel. It'll get bottled coming up this August, most likely. And then we'll start figuring out the logistics of getting it out that way. So huge shout out to our friends at HEB for picking it up. Some of you Texans know what an HEB, and probably many of you that aren't Texan know what HEB is. Shoot, I'm from Northern California. I know what HEB is. But congrats to you. Thanks for winning. Thanks for participating and all that good stuff. Now, what's really cool about, you know, I mean, what's really cool and kind of the even bigger thing about this is that I mentioned like all like the money that's raised goes towards the Napa Valley vintners. This is not something that we see on the winery side. Like the money that gets, we don't get a cut of it. We're donating the wine. We're donating our time and effort to this. But the really big thing that happens over the course of the 4 or 5 days that this is going on is the networking. This is, and when I talk about like the convention and shaking hands and kissing babies and trying to be out there and being present, this is something that is super important in this industry. You know, the cliche of who you know is still going strong. Like, let's not kid ourselves. It is a big deal to be present and to be active. And this is where I think some wineries fail miserably. It's where some businesses in general fail, is that they just don't, they're not out there enough. Now, you have to work within your means. You know, if you don't have 20 cases to give this event, then don't give 20 cases. You can do 10, you can do 5. If you don't have 5 because you sell out of everything and you need every drop of juice you got, then fine. That's fine. Don't worry about it. You know, figure out a way to be involved. But you have to act accordingly, right? For us, you know, very luckily, we've been in and around this valley for such a long time that we know a lot of these people. But we haven't really participated or been active. And there are a lot of new brands that were there, surprisingly enough. There are a lot of old brands that, of course, many of you know their names, your Silver Oaks and your, you know, Camuses or whatever. And I don't even think Camus had a lot this year. Maybe they did. I thought they did. Maybe they didn't. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's the who's who of who's in the industry and in the valley out here. And when you're meeting with, you know, all your colleagues, all your friends over the course of this week, I mean, of course, you know, it's great to see them. It's great to catch up and see what's going on and talk some shop. On top of that, when you're meeting new distributors, when you're meeting new restaurateurs and retail shops, it allows you to just broaden your reach and cast a wide net. Because maybe they're not going to work with you specifically, but they've got a friend somewhere that'd be like, hey, you might be a perfect fit for this. And that's kind of the networking that happened. In fact, when, I mean, I mentioned who picked up our lot, that started last year at this event. We attended last year to kind of get a preview of how we wanted to, you know, be a part of it. And we decided we wanted to do this auction lot and really put our best foot forward. And we made that connection right out of the gate. We got to know the wine buyer for Disney, for Total Wine, for like big companies. We also met a lot of smaller retailers that just have like their one shop down in Southern California or in, you know, another state. So it's not just like that big, crazy, you know, we got to make tens of thousands of cases mentality. It's also like, hey, can we actually do this like on a small scale and just be really present with some of these great accounts, you know, in a kind of, you know, very niche way. So there's a great way to kind of leverage this, both as a small producer, but especially, of course, as a big producer as well. Now, of course, some of you are probably thinking, Mike, you've talked so much shit about distributing wine and how small brands don't make any money on it. And why would you even bother doing something like this? Because the margins just don't make sense for someone like you. That's what you've been saying for, you know, the entire time you've been doing this podcast. For 2 years, you've been saying this. And you're not wrong. That's exactly what I've been saying over the last couple of years. But this is kind of the reality of the wine industry as it stands, in kind of my humble opinion, you know, is that you kind of have to dip your toes into the pool. If your wine is not out and about, if it's not being shown off, if it's getting no airtime anywhere, you're in essence dead in the water, unless there's something cool and interesting about you in this day and age that's really going to shock and awe people. Telling people that Philippe Melka makes your wine doesn't necessarily do it anymore. Telling people that you got 100 points doesn't necessarily do it anymore. Those are great marketing tools, great tactics, but is it really going to move the needle? It might give you a little bit of a splash. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. If you get 100 points, it's kind of a golden ticket, at least for a little bit. But at a certain point, you've got a lot of wine to sell, and there's probably only one of your wines that got that big rating. There's probably only one of those wines that's made by that high power, or a couple of your wines even, that's made by that high powered consultant. You know, what are you going to do to actually sell the rest of your wine? And on top of that, you know, I'll give you a little bit of perspective. And actually, this kind of bleeds into our next question as well, in terms of like the growth of a brand and where you want to be and your goals. And the reality is that every winery right now too has wine to sell, including us. We're long on inventory, like so many other people that are out there right now. It behooves us to put our foot out there, to dip our toes into this pool and say, hey, at a certain point, cash in the bank is cash in the bank. We need some cash flow. You know, we don't necessarily have to be doing it this way, But you know what? If we have wine to sell and visitation in Napa Valley's down and there's not a lot of people coming to the winery, our wine club has actually shrunk for the first time, like a lot of others out there, like that's something that is a big shot across the bow. Like, hey, we should probably play with our tactics and our strategies a little bit and see what else we can do to move the needle. And now that we've been doing this for a decade and a half, we have a lot of friends. We have a lot of connections. We have a lot of people that are interested in making things happen and getting our wines out and about. And it's time that we started leveraging that. So that way we can kind of broaden our network and broaden our reach. Does it make us the most money in the world? And for a lot of wineries, does this make them the most money in the world? Probably not. But when someone, the idea is that if your wine's out there and you're present and you're involved, that's eyeballs on you. It's marketing. And you kind of, this is where the argument for any, you know, marketing department gets tough, because you're like, give me the ROI. What is the return on my investment for this thing? And we'll see. You know, you kind of have to just be like, this is, you know, you're casting a wide net. So hopefully you can scoop up the big fish at some point. There might be some minnows in there. Don't get the sea turtle. Let the sea turtle and the dolphin go. Like, those can't be in there. But, you know, any of the fish, get me something that's going to be good for this program. So, you know, it's something that you can, as a brand, leverage for yourself the right way should you need it. Don't just do it for the sake of doing it. There are plenty of brands there this year that were just like, this is what you do. And I'm like, yeah, kind of. But what are you, like, next? Like, do you have a plan for this? Like, what's your next step? So this is something where, as a marketer, you have to understand kind of the ramifications of what you're doing, being present, all this good stuff, and also what your goals, your end game is. And for us, it's our reach. It's trying to get our wines in front of more people and be a more established, more solid brand, especially after a very rocky year last year. That was a very long-winded answer to that question, but that's kind of, I mean, that's the gist of it, realistically, is, you know, as kind of much as I could condense it down, because there's a lot that goes on during this event. It's a great way to support the Valley as a whole. It's a great way to get your wines in front of a lot of people and kind of improve your brand, like cachet or whatever you want to call it. We'll be back again next year, 100%. It's going to be really, really great. This is one of the reasons, actually, Brittany's got meetings today with distributors in Texas. She's going to be working with HEB folks to get our lot out their way. I mean, you know, the ball's already moving. There's stuff like this that's really, really great and can really help propel you forward when it comes to your wine business. It's not for everybody, and you need to know how to leverage it, and you better have kind of your goals and order of operations and everything like dialed in to make this make sense, because, you know, if you're just throwing spaghetti at the wall hoping it sticks, that's fine, I guess, but you better have at least some sort of plan to get it to stick. You know what I mean? I think I know what I mean. That made sense in my head, but now I'm not so sure. All right, we're moving on. We've beaten that horse dead. So on to the next thing. And this is actually kind of a perfect segue from kind of that branding marketing kind of conversation that we're having. So question number two. Oh, let me timestamp this bad boy. You all know I hate editing this and listening to the sound of my own voice, especially when it's all stuffed up, but whatever. All right. What is the next big step for your wine brand? Do you have any particular goal that you were trying to achieve? And I'll answer this kind of broadly, because I think this is an interesting question, especially in this day and age and kind of where the wine industry is. And the answer is, very simply, I'm not really sure. As I just talked about throwing spaghetti at the wall and having a path and trying to do all this stuff, I do know that, you know, for us, we want to have a little bit more reach. Especially with Blair Payton, our label Blair Payton, and the Diversum wines, you know, wines that are, you know, kind of built for being out and about, that are a little bit more affordable, quite a bit more affordable than the other wines that we've produced under MTGA. Like, we're really trying to broaden our reach. But I remember, this is shout out to Hans out at the winery last week or the week before, asking this question, because my answer at the time, and still is, you know, this MTGA thing and this wine business thing has already gotten to the point I never thought it would get. You know, I put food on the table, I pay my mortgage with the wines that I make, with the business that I started 16 years ago. And that's something that does not make a lot of sense to me. There's that still a little bit of like imposter syndrome kind of thing. But what more can I ask for? You know, I've got a car in the driveway to get me from point A to point B. I got a roof over my head. I've got this nerd station set up around me here to record the show. Like, life's pretty damn good, all things considered. Could I make more money? Sure, why not? Could I buy a new car instead of driving this 2011 Subaru around? Probably. Do I need that? No. You know, it's like there's, I'm like right now, there's not like this next like big leap for MTGA. The only thing that I can think of, and this is something that it's kind of the dream, is having our own vineyard that we actually farm and that we manage. So buying some land or having our own facility where we can make our own wines. You know, those are like the two big reach goals that are, I mean, at least a 5-year, maybe 10-year process of even getting to. So those are kind of the really stretch goals based on how the next couple of years really shake down and then what kind of things we can do. I've already started saving for some of that stuff. You know, basically every disposable dollar that's not going to, the expenses I just mentioned, you know, that's being shoveled away and put into an account to try and earn some interest or, you know, as an investment to try and make some additional money and have that kind of work for me in the market. That way, you know, when it comes time to pull the trigger on something kind of big, new, and exciting, we're able to do so. That's kind of the next big goal. And I think this is kind of that balancing act with any wine brand or any business for that matter, is that at a certain point, like if you hit your saturation level, and the wine industry as a whole is kind of at that point right now. So everyone's kind of shaking their boots trying to figure out what's next. And I think there are a lot of brands that kind of had these grand plans of being like the next big thing. And that might not be possible right now in terms of where the market's at and where wine sales are and all these other things. You know, I think for any business, you have to kind of figure out your plan like ABC. Plan A is like you're shooting for the moon. Like I talk about, you know, buying a vineyard property or building out our own production facility or buying a production facility. We're talking millions, many, many millions of dollars, you know, to make something like that happen, barring some sort of ginormous market implosion, right? So that's a big stretch, right? Outside of that, roof over the head, food on the table, can pay the bills, we're comfortable, we're good, we're happy, right? At a certain point for brands and kind of the serial entrepreneurs, this is where I see some of them kind of get into trouble, is just kind of that overreaching of trying to make it happen too fast and not being satisfied with where they're currently at. This was something that I've seen many brands do, and it's so funny that like math is this hard sometimes to me, where, you know, they have X sales goal. The company puts forth, the higher ups put this sales goal of X amount of dollars. And you look at, you know, the inventory you have, the amount of that inventory you need for samples, for wholesale, for the tasting room and wine club, all this stuff. And all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, we don't have enough wine to hit that goal. Like this doesn't work. So you can only at a certain point go, like if you're not planning on increasing your production and maybe you don't even have the demand to be able to increase your production that to that level, like this goal no longer makes sense. Like what, where do we actually want to or need to be, right? And on the other side of it, some, you know, so maybe you're just overreaching in a huge way. You know, maybe you don't quite have the market share or the niche carved out that you want, and you're just throwing all of your effort into this, but it's just not working. I've been a part of some of those projects where like, we want to be known for this. I'm like, yeah, but you're known for this. And this is a very different thing. Very different segment of the wine market than this other thing over here. We're talking about like, compare like a high-end, like $300 bottle of Cabernet to like a $26 bottle of Rosé. Like those are two very different segments of the wine world to play in. And if you're killing it on one or the other, you probably should just find a way to leverage that as best you can rather than trying to force a square peg through a round hole. So depending on what your like financial goals are, depending on what your aspirations are in terms of the industry, the land, the production facility, the style of wines you want to be making, the volume of wines, like what's the point? I mean, really, like I mentioned, you know, you could always make more wine and potentially make more money, but do you need to, right? And I think that's kind of the point that many brands get to, and they just start doing things for the sake of doing things. They get out over their skis. They have too much inventory. It stacks up. Visitation goes down. Sales go down. And all of a sudden, they have all this cost burden, and they fold because they scaled well past where they should have been. You know, it's going to be very interesting to see how that shakes out for a lot of brands. This is why we've always been very slow and steady with our growth plan. And 1,200 cases might not sound like a lot, but when you see 800 sitting in the cellar and you're like, okay, I'm selling 6 to 8 bottles at a time, it's like, oh my gosh, like we've got some real work to do here to sell through all of this. This is a conversation, like a little sidebar here, we had with a distributor a couple of weeks ago, where we're trying to sign on, get our wines into this market. And they're like, you know, realistically, they told us this, you know, if we're going to work with you, we want to know that we can do about $100,000 worth of business with you. Which means, you know, we need to have a certain volume of our wines available to them so that they can hit that sales goal. Like, hey, we want this to make us a lot of money. You guys are going to need it to make you a decent chunk of change. And this is kind of where we like to play. So we got to sit down and I get to go through all of our inventory, what we currently have in stock, what we're planning on bottling this year and the year after, and saying, like, here's the path to that. Because we're mid-vintage right now. Some of these wines we've already been selling through. So maybe this year doesn't hit that 100K. But here's the path to get to where you want to go. Should this be where you want to be or where you want us as a brand to be and where we think, honestly, if you really want to hit that mark, here's what we can do and what we can provide to you to do just that. So, you know, you figure out, does this actually make sense? Does this goal and this next big step forward for us jive with what we want to be doing? Do we even have the wine to be able to achieve that? And it's going to be a great, honest conversation with them. I think Brittany's having that conversation in like a couple of hours, as a matter of fact, to figure out like, hey, is this a relationship that this is what you're asking of us? We think we can make this happen. There's going to be some maybe growing pains to get us there. Hopefully not too painful, but you know, you just got to build and build a little bit. And let's see what we can do together. Let's find a great partnership in this and make it work. So, you know, for any brand, like, you got to figure that stuff out. It's got to make financial sense. It's got to make supply and demand sense. It's got to do, you have to do all of that for any brand. And when you're trying to sort out these next big steps, like maybe saving up for a vineyard, I still can't believe I'm saying that out loud, saving up for a vineyard or a wine facility, it's like, okay, what's that going to take? Millions of dollars. Awesome. What does that mean? Okay, if you're going to do it yourself, you better have that in the bank or you take on investors in some way, shape, or form. What does that look like? And you start ironing out some of the nitty-gritty details of all that stuff. So, you know, that's why I wanted to address that question a little bit broadly because, you know, for our wine brand, we've taken it very slow and steady. We've just done what's worked for us. When we've taken big leaps, it's been very cold and calculating. There hasn't been anything that we've done that hasn't been that. And if we've ended up a little bit behind, like many wine brands are right now, as we talk about the wine market, then it's like, okay, what's the next big thing? Okay, broadening our reach, our marketing, doing things like Premier Napa Valley and getting our wine in front of more people. That way, hopefully we have more sell through on the back end side of things. Okay, I think that kind of addressed the question. Hopefully that made sense. It is an interesting point to basically have achieved, toot toot beep beep, a lot. You know, and getting this brand of ours and our business to a place that I never thought it would be. Here we are. I'm super stoked to be here. We're in the process of figuring out what's next. Long story short. Okay, question number 3. Okay, back to a little bit more just what's happening right now. What are the repercussions of the bridge being out? Are the wines okay? And are the winery operations still going as planned? I believe a couple episodes ago, and I also mentioned this last week, the repercussions right now is that basically any of the heavy operations in terms of like bottling runs and potentially harvest work are like not going to happen. Like that is the potential repercussions we're dealing with right now, is that we don't really have a plan B to circumvent trying to get heavy equipment and truckloads of grapes to the winery. So That's the tough part. And we don't really, and there's no solution right now. So I might have mentioned that last week during the, you know, beginning of the episode. We're still sorting all that out. Now, the benefit of the wines being out at the winery is that they're still in barrel. They're safe. They're being stored there. Everything tastes great. We're making sure that all the wines are fine. Like, everything is all good. Like, the wines themselves are in a good spot. And we've had a ton of friends reach out, you know, offering to help and try and figure out, like, what we can do to truck wine certain places and make sure that it's in a good spot for bottling and all that. Like, it's, like, we're in a really good spot. I'm thrilled to be where we are. It is just a... it's a mess. Like, this is just an absolute mess of trying to figure out logistically what we can do, what we can't do, how much weight can go through certain properties or over certain bridges, if we even have access to them, so on, so forth, and such as the South Africa's. It'll be fine. You know, I really don't have any updates. I don't think I'm going to have another update for at least a few more weeks. It's going to be kind of the same. We're just waiting to see what happens, what the county can do, what the timeline is actually going to be when it comes to repairing the bridge that's out. But the good news is the wines are fine. And we have, I'm basically on plan. A was that, B was that, couldn't do that. C was that, probably can't do that. We're on plan D right now. Which is, in essence, if we need to get through our bottling run, we're going to move the wines off-site, bottle them elsewhere at a friend's place, and then go from there. That is, plan D is like our last-ditch effort when it comes to bottling and all the stuff that we need to be getting done. Plan E will address harvest and our August bottling, which is much bigger in both size and scope, and of course, harvest is a shit show. So that... plan E's got to wait. Like, we got to figure out plan D first and see how that all shakes down. And then we can move on to the next thing. And hopefully by that point, we have some more solutions and better updates for you all. But right now, the wines are fine. Things are good. Surprisingly calm, I suppose, in dealing with this. But, you know, the stories we're going to get to tell. It's good times. All right, I think we got time for one more quick one here. Let's do that. All right, question number... number four. All right, question number four. Oh, this is from this last week. Shout out to Brian out in Utah. Brian? Oh, shoot, was it Brian? What was your name? I'm so sorry. It was Matthew and... oh, no, did I forget? I'm so bad with names. Doug. I don't know why I thought Brian. Doug, shout out to Doug. This was a question, Doug. I don't know why I was thinking Brian. I'm sorry, Doug. It's my bad. Shout out to Doug out in Utah. What's the deal with Cab Franc? It seems like it's gotten really popular, but I don't get it. It's not the grape for me. Sorry, I said that really fast. One more time. What's the deal with Cabernet Franc? It seems like it has gotten really popular, but I don't get it. It's not his thing. I remember talking about this because we were talking about Cab Franc and using it for blending and that it's got this cool niche kind of culty thing around it right now and just wasn't his thing. I don't really know. This is one of those things in the wine industry that I wish I could explain it, but I just don't think I can. You know, you see this in any industry, in any consumer good. Like, certain things get really popular and trendy, and then it kind of fades off. But I think one of the reasons why Cabernet Franc has gotten so popular, kind of at a baseline, is that some of us make a pretty good one out here, and we're really happy about it. We use the overwhelming majority of it for blending purposes. Like, there's very little of it that tends to be a standalone grape. Like, Petit Verdot is kind of like this. As well, there are a handful of people that make a little bit of it on its own, and it tends to sell like hotcakes because it's just something cool, it's something different and exciting, and that's great and all, right? That's super cool. Commercially viable, like if you're gonna like make a boatload of it and try and sell it across the country, like I'm not so sure. The reason I think Cab Franc can be a problem for some people is that it naturally leans towards its kind of greener characteristics. Now, those pyrazines we talked to, so that green bell pepper when it's like really, really bad and like underripe. If you want to understand what that's like, go check out a Loire Valley from France, Loire Valley Cabernet Franc. That'll tell you everything you need to know about that really restrained, really edgy and kind of funky style of Cab Franc. Now, if you wanted something... you know, that's more like Napa Valley inspired. I mean, shoot, you could try ours. There's a number of number of people that make it to hunt it down. But it's more of that like middle ground. Like it's got some richness. There's still some of those more savory characteristics, but it's not like green underripe. There are also a fair amount of people that make it in like this really big, like jammy rich style, which I think, you know, for me personally, not my thing. I understand why some people love it though. And it can like go either way. You know, the finesse you need to have with Cab Franc to really make it sexy and delicious and not too jammy and not too edgy is tough. Like, it's a really tough grape to work with. It also goes through these really interesting peaks and valleys as you're making it. Like, for some reason, my experience with it is that it always gets super reductive and like closed off, and you just have to like give it some air. You have to rack it. You need to increase the pump overs you're doing with it. Like, it just, like, you kind of have to keep it moving in its youth. Otherwise, it gets really edgy really fast, and it can cause problems. It's a lot like Pinot Noir that way. Like, there's this window where it just is really super finicky, and you just have to kind of deal with it. Luckily, that can be mitigated in the cellar and through your winemaking tactics and things. So it's as long as you're paying attention, like, you're going to be just fine. Honestly, I don't know why it's so popular right now. I'm glad it's popular because personally, I love it as a variety. I'm very glad that we get to work with it and that so many other people get to as well. It's a shame that there's not more of it to go around. I think that that's a very big issue. But it's cool that it has its little niche. And whether you like it or not, good on you. You know, it's just like any trend. Like, why did rosé get so big over the last 10 years? Like, I don't know. Like, no one liked rosé for the longest time. She's like, oh, it's too sweet. It's white zin. You're like, no, it's actually refreshing and cool. And people are like, no shit, it actually is. And now it's huge and you see it everywhere. You know, it's the same thing with red blends and like Pinot Noir post, you know, sideways effect. Like, you saw the brands of like The Prisoner, Apothic, like a Meiomi and everything just explode into the scene because, you know, there was this undercurrent of other wines that were kind of like on the downturn, and all of a sudden these were just like the new hot things that no one had ever seen before. And it's weird. I don't understand like what the exact market like trigger is to get that going. I have no idea other than kind of anecdotally, like, here's what was going on at the time, right? But every once in a while something just catches fire and you run with it to the best of your ability and hopefully do a good job doing it, and you go from there. So the deal is that it's a really complex, interesting variety. Even if you're not a huge fan of it, there's a lot that it can do to add to a blend or even be a standalone wine. There's very, especially in Napa, there's very little of it planted. So it's a very niche, very small market. And it's something that is typically used for blending. You rarely see these standalone wines. More and more people have done a little bit of them for their wine clubs and kind of these one-offs because it's like, hey, here's something cool and interesting that we know our consumers are probably going to enjoy. Like, there's a pretty good chance they're going to. So, awesome. That's great. Let's make a little bit of it, but it's pretty finite, you know, between like us. Like, we only make 2 barrels of it. One goes to the wine club, the other is used for blending. That's all we got. Like, it's here and gone before we even know what to do with it, which is kind of crazy. So, which is, you know, it's nice. It's good to have a wine that's in demand like that. Whether it's Cabernet Franc or whatever the next thing will be that gets trendy. You know, someone will already have that market kind of dialed in, and it'll be popular and fun and exciting. And yeah, who knows? If only I had a great crystal ball to tell me what wine was going to be popular next. That would be cool. I'd love to have that. That'd be rad. All right. Thanks so much for tuning in. This has been the February Q&A episode. Again, be sure to check out our website, mtgawines.com, to check out our upcoming events, everything that we got going around the country this spring and into the summer months. Be sure to follow us on all of our social networks at mtgawines, YouTube, Instagram, the Book of Face, and the social network formerly known as Twitter. Last and certainly not least, for those of you listening, be sure to like and subscribe to the show wherever you're consuming your podcast. If you have a brief moment to leave that little star rating or review, please do to help us out with getting the algorithm to work in our favor and getting the show out and about. Have an excellent rest of your week. We will see you next time. We're kicking off a new month with the next episode. We're into March already, people, on the Wind Up Podcast. My name is Mike. We'll see you next week. Cheers.